Chapter 60. The uniqueness of the building didn't stop with the elevator's female voice, a voice that would have set the adolescent Jesse Stone's mind a-reel. The hallway floors were done in a mosaic of vibrant azure, white, and corn-yellow Mexican tiles. The entrance to each condo was framed with an ornate terracotta surround, the color of sun-baked red clay with granite accents, and topped by a fanciful arched cornice. The doors themselves were massive, double-sided, paneled, and sun-bleached, as if reclaimed from an old desert mission. The hardware was heavy, hand-hammered iron. Jesse had seen many such entrances to houses back in Tucson, but never inside an apartment building. Pruitt rapped his knuckles on the wood. When the doors pulled back, they were surprised to see a black face staring back at them. A man's black face. And the man attached to that face did a pretty good job of filling up the doorway. He had a tree-trunk neck with thighs to match, and his arm muscles rippled with even the slightest movement. He wore a pink golf shirt, khakis, and deck shoes, which did little to soften his intimidating look. "IDs, gentlemen?" the big man asked politely enough. Both men did as they were asked. This was no time for a testosterone fest, not with Belinda Yankton likely within earshot. When he returned their badges and credentials, Pruitt inquired as to his identity. He didn't give a name, just "private security provided by Miss Yankton's ex. She's expecting you. Kitchen." They stepped inside past security. The spacious living room was beautifully appointed with an eclectic mix of Asian, Mexican, and African objets d'art. The furniture was oversized, featuring lots of wood, leather, and woven fabrics. Pruitt described it as Texas ranch rustic. The tiled floors were covered in colorful American Indian rugs. There were two sets of windows, twice the size of the front doors, yet the room was dark. The windows were shuttered, slats facing so that almost no outside light could leak in. The place smelled of cigarette smoke, must, and fear. Belinda Yankton sat at the kitchen island, smoking a cigarette burned down to the filter, an overfull ashtray and a big mug of coffee in front of her. She was still thin and had put some effort into prettying herself up for her guests, but Jesse guessed her heart wasn't in it. You could see she was a very attractive woman who had aged years in a very short time. Her cigarette hand shook. Jesse had seen this before with people who had survived traumatic events, rape victims, hostages, people who'd been in a bomb's blast zone. He had seen it in Suit. The physical wounds heal, but the trauma is never far away. Pruitt and Jesse waited for Belinda to make the first move, because the woman's state of mind couldn't have been more evident if the word fragile had been tattooed across her forehead. "Hey guys, please sit," she said, her voice surprisingly calm and steadier than her hand. Jesse and Pruitt sat across from her. "Can I get you some coffee?" "That'd be great," Jesse said. Pruitt shook his head. "No, thank you, ma'am. I'm just fine." She tamped out her cigarette and poured a mug for Jesse. Watching Jesse fix the coffee to his liking, Belinda Yankton lit another cigarette. "So," she asked, "how are we going to do this?" Jesse turned to Pruitt. "Chief, you think you can give Miss Yankton—" "Belinda, please. I'd like it if you called me Belinda. For weeks he called me the Rude Blonde. Even after he knew my name, he'd call me that. The Rude Blonde. The Rude Blonde," she said, repeating it over and over. "Sure, Belinda. Call me Jesse. Chief, could you give Belinda and me a few minutes?" "That okay with you, Belinda?" Pruitt asked. "Yes, Chief Pruitt. I'd like that." They waited until Pruitt had left. When he was gone, Belinda offered Jesse a cigarette. He said no, that the coffee would suit him for now. He had thought a lot about how he would approach this conversation, if he got the opportunity to have it. And seeing how brittle Belinda was, he decided to go ahead with his first impulse. "Listen, Belinda, I'm sure you're sick to death of rehashing what happened to you, and that you can't be looking forward to telling another cop about how you were afraid for weeks at a time and the rest of the things you went through." She nodded, unable to look Jesse in the eye, a stray tear rolling down her cheek. "So I'm going to tell you about my encounter with the man who held you. And if anything comes to mind to say, no matter how silly or trivial it may seem, please say it. Interrupt me whenever you'd like, okay?" She nodded again, her hands shaking more violently now than they had only a minute before. "You know what my therapist always says when he sees something going on with my hands?" Jesse asked, pointing at her cigarette hand. "You have a therapist?" She sounded surprised, her voice less steady than before. "I do." "What does he say to you, Jesse?" "He'll nod at my hands and say, 'Put that into words.'" "So, Belinda, put your shaking hands into words." "I'm ashamed to say it." He smiled his most comforting smile at her. "No need for shame around me. I don't think you could embarrass yourself any worse than I've embarrassed myself. So come on and say it. We're going to have to trust each other."
"Okay, Jesse. Will you hold my hand, please? I really need to hold on to someone. Everyone's so afraid to touch me, they're afraid I'll crack or something. Please, Jesse?"
He didn't answer with words. Instead, he reached over the island countertop and tamped out her cigarette. When that was done, he took both of her hands in his, and he told her about how he had met Mr. Peepers.